Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Join us from inside the design studios for conversations about presentation design, strategies, tips and tricks, running a design studio, and more. All for presentation designers, managers, and presenters. Here are your hosts, Troy Collar, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
Hi, I'm Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services, Inc., based in Southern California.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in balmy Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Well, Sandy, it's just the two of us to introduce this episode. Nolan is, I believe, right up the coast from me, either Los Angeles or San Francisco by now, leading, I'm sure, some amazing training programs for corporate clients. So I guess we can talk about what's happening in our studios.
Sure. Well, let's see. I'm getting ready for the kickoff work on the one conference I'm willing to do each year. Because, you know, I resigned about a year and a half ago now, and this is the one client that I absolutely adore, and I'm really, really excited. But that one conference that I quit, the client went to another business, and he's already called me. So you just never know what's going to happen. How about you, Troy?
I have been traveling. I've been supporting like a number of LED wall configurations. Nothing is a standard 16x9 projection. So designing and running ultra wide presentations, which is always really, to me, really cool because it's unique. It's different. It's things that shouldn't be done, you know, according to what most people think. And
right.
Well, it's good. You know, Lori's been in the studio heading up the really fun projects. Let's see here. Just off the top of my head, she has been developing the presentation templates and also the marketing style guide. So it's kind of, they're building out these templates, but then they're also building out a full marketing style guide for an animation studio. So this studio has major style guides for each of the properties, but they're not marketing guides. Like, here's the general information. It's really, really fun. She's having a lot of fun working with the new marketing team doing this, and it's awesome stuff. You know, it's animation. It's like you couldn't ask for better assets.
So what formats?
You know, I can't talk about that.
Oh, you can't. Okay.
Yeah. I can't talk about that one. It's definitely something that's under NDA. And in this case, we're not even allowed to talk about it yet. So there are properties that are out there and everybody's seen them. So it's very cool stuff.
No, I'm just curious.
Speaking of properties I can talk about though, she's been working with Barbie. Yes.
Yeah, so jealous. Barbie.
Been doing a lot of work with the Barbie team and that's been really fun. She always appreciates that, you know, and we've got a couple of, you know, I'm really bad at this. We have a couple of ladies cosmetic lines. I can't even tell you the names of them, but I know they're very, Lori was up in Beverly Hills at some glamorous
fancy
studio doing a meeting the other, just last week. So, you know, we've picked up a couple of clients in that realm as well.
Awesome.
Then there's the financial client. We're doing this full rebrand. They did a full rebrand of their entire brand identity. So tons of presentations. Tons of charts and really, really specific visual standards. I mean, we actually helped create the monster by, maybe it was 3 years ago. We actually did their full master template that's used by all their analysts. So it's more of a PowerPoint document than a presentation. It's
pitch deck. They call them pitch decks.
And we created this amazing set of templates that are very, very detail oriented. I mean, they are full brand style guides in and of themselves. And they detailed everything down to, you know, charts have to have, you know, this is where the legends go. This is, you know, tables are based on this font size. I mean, colors and that, well, they're redoing them all. So what's with news? Anything happening in the presentation world we can talk about?
Well, let's see. Well, Nolan's not with us. And you'll remember that our last podcast, he announced and he was really excited about 3D model support on the Mac. Mm-hmm. Well, between then and now, he discovered it was removed from his computer. And this is just so odd because, okay, we had a discussion with Microsoft and we learned that 3D support on the Mac now depends on what version the Mac OS is running. So certain versions can't support 3D model. So what I don't get is it did support, his version did support it, but now it doesn't.
Well, and so it does get better. I mean, Microsoft has promised a web page detailing which Mac OS versions are needed for each feature. So hopefully maybe by the next podcast, next episode, we'll have a URL to send out. Who really knows? But there was bugs apparently. And you know, Microsoft is discovering them as they go. And they said, hey, this would be a bad scenario if things suddenly stopped working. So they now do an OS check, and they'll only install it if your version of the Mac OS runs. So apparently, apparently it was every install everywhere. Nola tested it, and he hadn't fully updated. And my guess is, on the next install, it actually deinstalled it so that they wouldn't have a it's maybe a good idea so that Microsoft doesn't get flack for things not working. But
and it's great in in the whole concept of beta testing. The public is a beta tester right now. At least they can respond quickly. You know what? I wanted to bring up our last podcast, and I don't know if this is how it'll be published, but we talked about video round tripping. And I'm going to tie this into the presentation summit. Troy, I don't know if you're doing this, but a lot of the presenters for the presentation summit this year are doing little video clips to promote their sessions. I know Lori did.
They are. Lori did. And it just got published yesterday. And it showed up in my Facebook feed. I was like, hey, beautiful. Here's a video of
There's
you.
There's my wife.
So yeah, now I'm being shamed into having to produce one. So I better get on it.
Yep, you better.
So what do you know about? What about him?
Okay, so Tom Howell is giving a presentation, but his video that he created used video round tripping. What he created a video where he stood in front of a screen that was running a video. But in truth, he was just standing in front of a screen that didn't have anything on it. He recorded the video of him delivering the presentation. Then he inserted it into PowerPoint, used subtract shape to create a mask where the screen was, and then he ran yet another video behind it that he had created in PowerPoint. He could have just run PowerPoint animation, but he said he inserted another video behind the mask. So it was done in a really creative way to combine all the capabilities of PowerPoint to create an awesome social media video.
That, you know, and this is the one where he's staying in front of the whiteboard, right? Kind of doing like the professor lecture thing. I saw that, but I did not realize that. I was actually more mesmerized by the little scratchy squiggles running through the text and trying to think how he did that. Okay. Okay. That's really, really, I'll see if I can find a link. I'll throw it in the show notes because I know it's out there because I've watched it.
And then just speaking of the presentation summit, Glenn Millar is going to host a session on video round tripping. So everyone, it's all tied together.
Oh, I didn't know that was one of his sessions. We should have had him us. That would be great. Well, Glenn's from Australia, so time zones will be a little bit difficult. One of us would not be sleeping if we did a podcast together. Although while we're at the summit, I do plan on capturing, cornering a couple of people that are international and having some recorded conversations. Okay, so Sandy, I've got a little bit of news. It's presentation news. It's kind of Microsoft news, but I know you'll like it because it's directly related to what we talked about last episode, the Microsoft Surface Go. So I was in New York City doing an event out there, and it was incredibly humid and hot. And I was like, hey, there's a Microsoft store. I'll jump in there just to stand in the air conditioning for a while while I walk around. So I got some hands-on experience and talked to a few different Microsoft store guys about the details of the Microsoft Surface Go. And I got some more information about it, if you'd like.
Yes, please.
I can summarize this. So first of all, it is the size of the original Surface 1 and 2. The original Surface 1 and 2 were a smaller form factor than the newer ones, but it is much thinner than those ones. So it's like half the thickness. Now, I will also say that I still run my Surface 2. It is my travel computer. I think it's a fantastic size. I refuse to give it up. A couple of interesting things about the Surface Go. It's running Windows 10S. I'm like, what's 10S?
What is that? Yeah.
It's basically an app store only operating system. You can't install an application. To me, it's more like a Chromebook. I mean, it's web-based only. It doesn't actually have, you can't install apps onto it unless they're web-based. Now, I was also told you can install the full Windows 10 if you want. It does not have a USB port anywhere, but I'm more excited that it has a USB-C port. It only has one, but a USB-C, which is kind of looks like the Apple Lightning one. I mean, it's double-sided. It's so much more functional. All of our laptops have to have them before I get any computer now. It's a step forward. My hope is really that the next Surface Pro will have a USB-C and dump the USB port.
Okay.
You were right. The keyboard and pen are sold separately.
Okay.
I couldn't believe that when you said it, but yes, that's the way it works. But they have bundled prices. I mean, they pretty much encourage you to get it. It's $200. You get the pen, you get the keyboard, and then they bundle in a whole bunch of software and other stuff. It'll do all the basics, but it's not going to really be great if you're going to do some real programming, you know, real intensive stuff. I actually had a USB key with me. I was going to like run a PowerPoint presentation on it. It has a USB-C port. I couldn't plug it in.
Oh.
So I didn't actually get to see it perform anything phenomenal. I did some tests. It's probably not on my Christmas list as the end of the Surface Go discussion.
It still reminds me of an iPad. You compared it to the Chromebook, but just I know it has its own, because it has its own OS. It's, you know,
I think that's what they're competing with.
Yeah,
you know, the price point's $500. Mm-hmm. What else is happening?
So we've been talking about the presentation summit. It's actually coming up next month, September 23rd through the 26th. I just wanted to let everyone know that the Presentation Guild will be holding our annual meeting on Sunday, September 23rd. So everyone join us, see what the Guild is all about and get a little inside scoop on what's been going on the last year.
So that's Sunday evening. That is good.
That's
we arrive.
Right.
Lori, I mean, we're kind of local. We're just driving down, but we arrive Sunday. So we will definitely be there. You know, I actually didn't know the date, so now I've got it on my calendar. You know, Summit Fever has definitely set in, and I'm really focused on bringing all of my talks to life because somehow this year I agreed to do more than two talks. So, and anyways, my notes and ideas I have been gathering for like 6 months are suddenly looking fantastic. I'm so excited. I've got all these presentations like, oh yeah, I got to integrate this. I'm really excited. I'm getting more and more excited about the summit as it gets closer, only because like the deadline is approaching and I have to get these presentations together and they're looking really cool.
Well, everyone, I can't wait to see what you're presenting. So
well, Sandy, have a great week. We will have Nolan back with us on the next episode, which is going to be a great conversation with just the three of us. And now we're going to jump over to a conversation I had with two guests all about ARS and presenting. Audience Response System, or ARS, is a great process of involving an audience in a presentation. At its core, it's polling the audience and gathering their answers, often shown live on the screen at the meeting. I've been using various systems for the better part of 15 years, some of them great, some of them far too simplistic to be a recommendation of mine. This is also kind of like another niche within the presentation industry that not everyone will be familiar with, and they possibly don't need it. But knowing what presentation design and audience interaction options are is always a great thing. So for our ARS conversation today, I am really happy to have not one, but two industry experts here. Hey, I'm joined by John Cosgrove and Ben Anderson. Let's start with introductions and you guys fill in anything I miss here. John Cosgrove now lives in Minnesota. And when I say now lives, it will make perfect sense when you hear his amazing accent. He has definitely traveled far to arrive in Minnesota. John is with VoiceHive, which is, first, it's a company with a great company name. I mean, it's a great name. And second, it's a major player in creating, and John, you're going to have to fill in some gaps here for me, but you build out mobile apps and registration systems for meetings and large corporate clients. And the reason you get to be a part of this, or I really wanted you here, is because VoiceHive has some of the best integrated audience interaction features that presenters can integrate into their presentations. I mean, it's audience response systems, but it's Q&A forums and a lot of other things that go on. And I've been really happy in working with you guys over, we've worked together a couple of times each year for the past number of years. So, John, say hello to everybody and fill in the gaps of what I missed.
Thank you, Troy. And thankfully, with the technology, it doesn't worry too much about accents. VoiceHive initially came up as an idea that I had when I used to MC events, and I was seeing how frustrated audience members were and attendees were trying to interact in real time with some of the systems that were there 15 years ago. So I wanted to create a system that was very simple, simply go on your phone, click a link, send a question, And then the further development of those came from working closely with a lot of planners and a lot of event planners who said, hey, it can do this. Can you make it do that? And so we added features as we went. But we started with a very simple live polling and live Q&A tool. And then it sort of evolved from that. And of course, as people trust you in what you're doing and what you deliver, they're more confident then in making suggestions. So we've been very lucky that way.
And I will say suggestions are implemented, which is the reason VoiceHive is great, because we get into talking about Q&A, which is a way of interacting with it. Your Q&A moderation system, it's really the best one I've seen out there. And I think a lot of that was just based on you seeing what was needed and gathering suggestions, and every meeting I show up to, you're like, oh, it does this now.
I'm very fortunate that my business partner is a very talented developer. And when I go back to him after events and I say, this Q&A tool is great, but they want to figure a way out how to moderate it and control it and manage it as it's coming in real time, he was right on the case. And through that attitude and through that sort of energy, we've been able to make a lot of people happy with the system. And we're not spending and wasting a lot of time trying to figure out how to make it better. We're open to being told. And obviously, when you have enough people telling you the same thing, it makes sense to make those changes.
Fantastic. And also joined by Ben Anderson, a show site graphics op that specializes in setting up and running audience response systems. His email is even benarsspecialist@fill-in-the-blank. I have worked with Ben on many meetings. He is one of a small group of TLC Creative Services trusted freelancers. So Ben actually works under our name when we can maybe get him on our calendar. So it's been really great. Ben, say hello, fill in the gaps of where you're from and background and something fun and interesting.
I live in Denver, Colorado, and I've been doing corporate event production work for, it's going to be 10 years in September. So I'm coming up on a decade right now. And I've been doing ARS throughout that entire time. That's actually how I got into corporate event production work. And something interesting is I've been playing the drums for 20 years, so I love to play music.
So not only is that interesting, but it's something I actually didn't know.
Oh, really?
I think I would. Yeah.
Oh, wow. You think you know people, Troy.
Okay. As a way to intro this conversation, let's just, because I want to get everybody on board, I did a little introduction prior to you guys coming on that kind of said what ARS is, or I kind of sort of defined it. But Ben, when somebody calls you and says, hey, I need an ARS system, or I need an ARS specialist for this meeting, what does your head say? What does ARS mean to you?
It means various things. A lot of times it's going to be just to keep the audience engaged throughout a presentation with random questions, or what's very popular are using the pre-test, post-test options within like Turning Point, for example. So you're actually going to be testing your audience live. So you really have to focus on the content. Yeah.
Yes. Now, John, you've got a whole different realm because you get asked everything from every meeting to what to implement and is it possible? And I'm sure you're making recommendations to meeting planners that are kind of looking for options. So when somebody says, hey, we want to get some audience engagement, we want to use this thing called ARS, what is it? What goes through your mind? What does it generally mean?
Well, then I go back to them and I ask them, well, what? Tell me about the event. What are you looking to achieve from this audience response? Is it just somebody once told you you had a good idea, let's get some audience response? Or do you have a definitive plan and agenda that by incorporating some audience response or audience feedback is going to be an integral part of the event? If it's just something that's peripheral, that's okay. But if it's something that you really want to dig deep and get the pulse of the audience as they go, and we've had some really fun and interesting events where planners and even executives have come and they really want to get that feedback and they really want to get that interaction going. Speakers as well. You know, in the past, speakers have come along with their canned presentations and just fill in the blank of whatever company they're presenting to. Now more and more they're wanting to engage the audience and really hear from them, and they want that to be a seamless part of the presentation so that the actual audience feels like they're engaged and they're contributing to the energy of the presentation.
Absolutely. And that's one of the biggest things I think out there is it kind of a, just a meeting offering, or is it something that the speaker can integrate into their talk, which is, I think it can help a speaker out tremendously by, you know, getting that audience engaged with them and just making a lot of, well, there's just so many different approaches to what ARS really is. Speaking of a lot of things, there are a lot of software options out there for adding ARS or audience interaction. Before we talk about what those are, how about like what type of meetings do we see ARS being used at? John, let's ask this way. What was the very last meeting you had where you had an audience interaction component? What type of meeting was it?
It was an internal, very large corporate meeting where the CEO wanted to talk to a lot of the leaders within the company. And there was over 2,500 of those leaders spread throughout the world for the company. So we wanted to find a way to engage with them. So he was giving a town hall type presentation. He was taking live questions. He only had a limited amount of time, so he wanted to be able to control the flow of the questions. He also wanted to have a sort of an idea of the tone of the questions. So before the event even started, all the attendees were sent a link, and they were able to submit their questions prior, and the CEO's team was then monitoring those questions, really to get a pulse and a feel for the questions that were coming in so that he could be somewhat prepared for it and he wasn't going to be hit from left field. Then at the event itself, and this was, you know, weeks out from the event, at the event itself, he was also taking questions. They were being moderated, and that's one tool that we've had to incorporate that's been very useful. By moderating those live feed of questions, you're able to sort of tailor the presentation around and control the flow of the presentation. Maybe not always the content as much as you want. And you have to give these CEOs and these executives a little credit. First of all, they're opening themselves up to being questioned, whereas in the past that would have seemed unrealistic. But now I feel with the way the workforce is evolving, especially with millennials, they're demanding that they want to be part of the conversation. So these questions are coming in, the CEO is taking them. They also did a couple of live polling questions, just again to get the pulse of the audience themselves. And at the end, they did a survey, and they wanted them to fill the survey in right away to get them while the content and while the feel and the energy of the presentation was fresh in their minds, without going home and mulling it over, maybe discussing it with coworkers or spouses or whatever. They wanted to get that instant reaction. So it was a very clear objective from that sort of hierarchy within the company, and then the team that was putting the event together, putting those pieces together to make sure that it fitted with what they wanted.
That is awesome, but I'm gonna have to change my answer I had already thought of because you triggered something else. But Ben, last meeting you did some sort of audience response system, some interaction. What type of meeting was it? Large, small, general session, multi-room, school?
It was actually a pretty small meeting. It was an eye doctor association meeting, and everybody in the room was on a participant list. This is using Turning Point. And so everybody's answers were being tracked, lots of multiple choice questions, but ultimately it was a pretty straightforward, simple meeting, but it went really well.
You know, I was going to, so here's the one I had thought of, and then John, you just made me remember another one. The last one I did that I remember where was the audience done it. It was the CEO, and he was gathering feedback as to, so it's a software development company, what features that the audience, which was, what do you call the audience? It's all users, but they're the corporate users. They were getting feedback on which directions they should focus on. So it was a very valuable amount of information. It was direct feedback on, hey, we've laid out what we think is our roadmap. Can you give us feedback? Is this a good direction? Is this a good direction? But actually, now that I think about it, you mentioned the feedback, and I didn't even think about that. I did another meeting just a few weeks ago where there was a feedback form on their mobile app, which was give us feedback on this presenter. Okay. So I want to talk about the software options because Ben, you've mentioned a few, John, you've got yours, but what are some of the ways we see ARS being used? And I'm going to say it specifically by a presenter. So my example of, hey, the meeting planning actually had a feedback mechanism through an audience. That one doesn't count. I want to know how a presenter on stage uses audience response effectively.
For me, because, you know, back in the day, before I get involved with VoiceHive, I was an MC and I was actually hosting a lot of trivia and games and interactive team building events. And there was a lot of options out there, a lot of handheld devices. I remember one in particular was almost like a clicker, but you could also type in some answers as well. And as a presenter, I had a lot of fun using that because scores and updates happened in real time. So I could focus on the sort of the presenting side of it. What I've seen in a couple of examples where a presenter is maybe their the content of their presentation is maybe the company or the organization is having a few challenges and he really wants to gather the thoughts and ideas of the audience in real time as he brings up some of the pain points. So he might say, okay, we're having a problem with XYZ. What are your, just right off the top of your head, brainstorming, collecting your thoughts, what do you think we should do? And there's a little text box and they're putting in their ideas. And he goes, obviously, we're not going to process all of those now, but let's talk about some of those ideas. So he's taken the collective hive, if you will, of the audience and picking from that in real time their responses. Obviously, live polling is a useful one as well. And I've seen sort of one-word responses to questions that he's asked. Again, one of my favorite examples was a speaker. This was a lady who had rowed across the Atlantic, very harrowing and emotional tale. She started the presentation by asking, when it comes to leadership, what word comes to mind? Everybody put in the word. And of course, it was all the usual corporate jargon. You know, if your boss is watching, what's the word you want to see up on the cloud? So they put the word cloud together. She took it down. She did her presentation. It was very emotional. It was very raw. It was vulnerable. And the audience really had followed this presentation. And she asked the same question again, and it was a completely different cloud. So she was able to put the two word clouds up side by side. And she said, here's what you say leadership is, because what you think it is, and here's what it really is, and this is what it means to you. So it was a really good, stark example of taking two audience responses from the same people and using it to measure basically her presentation.
That sounds awesome. I've never had anybody do a comparison like that. No. So a word cloud is actually a major one. I think it was one of the bigger breakthroughs in audience response when we went from kind of ABC selection to being able to enter your own open-ended structure.
It's one of our most popular features. It was one that we adopted really early on when we were developing. And, you know, it's evolved since then. And some companies have asked for, an organization have asked for sort of a sentence cloud, and they've always pulled back from that. The one word cloud is always the most powerful.
Yeah, the word clouds are great. And I use them in several different software options. And I think they're, I have many meetings where they actually ask for it later so it could be built out into a, you know, a follow-up material. Hey, here's what we talked about on this. Word clouds are huge. Polling, where it's just the ABC and it's a bar chart and percentages are big. Ben, what have you seen that's kind of great ways of being used by a presenter?
I actually saw something very similar to what John was describing earlier. Basically, the audience could, via the software, pose a question to the board members on stage. And one of their people was actually in the back of the room filtering out which questions they could actually see. And there was a direct feed to the DSMs, downstage monitors. So then they could actually answer these questions in real time, which I thought was pretty impressive, pretty handy. But then again, I see a lot of these, the really standard, you know, 1 through 9 answer options, pretest, post-test, word clouds are pretty popular these days as well.
Yeah, word clouds. Do you guys do do gameplay? I've done a lot of them where it's gameplay where it's the answers are, we'll break the room into maybe it's by table for an award show is pretty common, or maybe it's by division. And so they're actually kind of they've gamified the meeting and the presenters all know it. So they have a certain allocation of points that they're allowed to, you know, ask questions about. So it kind of becomes very, very active as soon as they say, hey, I've got another one up here for points. Like, it's amazing how many people snap to attention because they want their team, however that was divided out. And I've seen, we did bar tab trivia type ones where it was fastest response, but fastest response correct. I mean, a lot of complexities involved.
There was a company that we worked with once that was struggling with communication between different departments, and there was some tension between different departments. And they set up some polling questions about priorities and where they think the priorities of the overall company lay. And when they showed the polling results, each division had their own color bar chart, and it ended up demonstrating that actually, most of them were pretty aligned. They just didn't realize it. And it was a good visual for them to see that, hey, we're all on the same page. We use different words, but we're all on the same page. But it wasn't until it was manifested in a live poll that it really reinforced the point.
Oh, that's awesome. I mean, it obviously worked awesome for the presenter because it probably could have gone completely different. And a good presenter would just roll with it and say, okay, now I can see there are differences. Let's address them.
That presenter was ready. If it hadn't gone well with a backup, okay, so how do we address this? But the fact that it was pretty aligned right from the get-go meant that the presentation headed in a different direction. But that's, again, good presenters, no matter how good the technology, and this is an important point, a good technology will not make a presenter great if they're not already a good presenter. They'll enhance a great presenter, but they won't make a bad presenter good.
So this is technology based. I'm going to ask Ben this question, or bring it up with Ben. So we had a system in place, and it was a feedback session. So it was kind of the last portion of the general session, and they were going to gather feedback from everybody in attendance. And I was set. The computers were good. The internet was good, but things did not work. And so they could not get the input from the audience. So a good presenter, the technology failed them. And they just said, okay, we're going back to old school, show of hands. Now, there was probably 800 people in the audience, and they literally just assigned three of their admins, okay, you tally up, and just come up with the approximate averages so I can take this information back. So the good presenter made it still work, and they ran through the questions because we had all those preset as slides, but the technology failed. And I say this with harrowing experience because I was responsible for making it work, but they gave out the wrong login information to everybody. So there was a disconnect, but the good presenter didn't stop the whole meeting. It went on. So to your point, John, yeah, the good presenter can make anything work. And it turned out to be a highlight in the end, kind of a funny one. So we've got polling. We got word clouds, we got gameplay, we've got feedback, we've got Q&A questions, which I'm going to come back to again, because I think that's such a big deal. And then the whole idea of perspectives of different audiences, presenters can definitely take advantage of this stuff. So what I'll say common today audience response software options that maybe we should say ones that we recommend, and the answers can be biased or not biased. Sure. John, which one do you recommend?
That's hilarious. Of course, I'm going to recommend VoiceHead because we'll build you what you want. On the other hand, there are sometimes there was an example this week where a large development company had a city meeting in the city with a lot of residents. And their concern was that, you know, obviously, our tool is built on the web, so it's accessible from smartphones. Their concern was the demographic that was coming to this event were an older generation. Their concern was that they wouldn't have a browser on their phone. Some of them might still have flip phones. And so it was an unusual case, so they couldn't use it. So they asked for a recommendation. So I recommended a couple of text options, which seemed antiquated, but actually ended up being very successful because most people there had access to a cell phone, maybe not a smartphone. And in fact, I was reading in the paper today the results of that meeting, and they were discussing how there was a live audience interaction and voting and some of the points that were being brought up. And the development company that hosted the meeting were lauded because they were actually getting the audience involved and buying into their ideas. So sometimes you can move so fast forward with development that you forget that there's still a demographic that maybe isn't up to speed.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And for that too, I see a lot in the college education and in the education field, they're still using the old traditional clicker, what I consider old traditional clicker systems as well, because again, maybe not everyone has access to a smartphone.
Ben, software you use?
Yeah, I have the most experience using Turning Point and then something called Conference.io.
Oh.
And every time I come to it, there's improvements and advancements in it. I do recommend each for various uses and environments, though. Turning Point, for example, is great because you can still use keypads, which I find, from my experience, I get more audience participation via keypad, more votes received than like a phone app-based voting system. Whereas Conference.io, on the other hand, is great if you're running a really large meeting with a speaker-ready room, and you don't want to worry about placing keypads anywhere. It's browser-based, app-based. You can format the question into a presentation. It'll work in any room as long as the software is installed on that show machine. So if you have like a pop-up meeting in room 34F, the guy all of a sudden wants to use audience response, no problem. Just format the questions, have speaker-ready, push it to the room. People will log in at the beginning, and that's it. Instead of scrambling to find keypads and change frequencies and blah, 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 blah.
I've not heard of this one. That's pretty amazing. I just looked it up and it's conferences.io. I'll put a link to that in the show notes for anybody who wants to look at it. I go way back with Turning Point. I think Turning Point is one of the more legacy software hardware solutions out there. They've obviously pivoted and now have an all web-based or mobile browser version. But and we've used it successfully, and I still highly endorse their use at meetings. We still get asked to support meetings with it. They have a standalone, and you know what? I should say I like it when it's the standalone little keypad that they have, and I use that in certain situations. Most European-based or international, I'll say, meetings, because there's a lot of issues with using data plans, text messaging, phone getting reception. I recommend when they want to go with that, we use a standalone or a completely, what's the word I want to use? I guess standalone, standalone system. So Turning Point is radio frequency in the room. It's keypad. So there's no learning curve at all. It's basically just push 1 through 9. They have a zero key. I got to think of the keypad. It's the easiest one to get people to utilize, but it's also one of the systems I think is more limiting compared to the other ones. There's no open-ended questions. There's no wordplay. You know, it's very, very simplistic on the keypads from that perspective, but it's also the one that has the best game options available to it. I use Slido, which their website is SLI. Oh, it is SLI.do. I've used them for Q&A stuff, which we'll talk about in a little bit. I used one recently that was literally made for elementary school teachers. It was like a game, and it was horrendous. It had horrible music. It had horrible graphics, but it was free, and this presenter decided to integrate it into it, and there was no changing the clock. This is the thing that got me. It was a 35-second clock because they're trying to ask kids questions like... I was talking to this presenter. I was like, you know, okay, I see this, but you know, 35 seconds is a really, really long time. Oh no, it's really fast. Less than a minute. I'm like, normally it's a 15-second clock. And sometimes I'm even fighting for that. If it's just simple, pick the right answer. Let's bring it down to like 9 seconds. Right. It was painful. It was like 15 of these questions throughout the presentation. It was so painful. Just the pauses in it. It was horrendous. I mean, it did the job. Awkward. Yeah. But it was something I would not endorse. And then Poll Everywhere. Poll Everywhere is probably it's one of the more popular mobile app ones where text messaging based ones is where they started. Now they have a mobile browser version. There's what I was trying to say. But I think Poll Everywhere has a lot of really good features. They've been around for a long time. And John, I believe, if I got my story right, Poll Everywhere actually originated from people that used clickers in university for attendance.
I believe so. I believe you're right. Yes.
So there's a lot of software out there. I'll just say this is a very few of them. And I've worked with probably close to 24 different software things, because a lot of times it's the meeting says, hey, here's what we've got. The ones that I really don't like, see, I said we could recommend or not recommend. Here's my not recommend outside the kids' elementary school one. A lot of companies now that offer the meeting apps, so a mobile app, it's almost like a checkbox. Do you have audience interaction? And they'll just say, yep, we do. And they get some off-the-shelf coding. And to get a question put in, you got to go talk to the administrator. To get the answers, you have to get the URL. To get the reason I say this is because VoiceHive is a meeting app system, and it actually works flawlessly. It went over so poorly at the meeting I'm thinking of, that the presenter on stage, I mean, we had a separate computer with the secure URL that's going to show the responses. No answers are coming in. First of all, because nobody could find the button in the meeting app. So there's a problem. They didn't really have a user experience thing. They just had like check boxes. Yep, we can add this. And nobody really thought about where you'd find it. And the second one is, it turns out that people were answering, but it only refreshed every like 7 minutes.
Oh.
Well, 7 minutes, the whole session was done.
Yeah. By the time
because everybody's like, well, what happened? I'm like, hey, look at the computer. This computer has no results. I'm going to jump out and hit refresh. Nothing. Next presenter comes up, is like, hey, I don't know what happened here, but I've got all the input answers just suddenly populated on this computer that's sitting over here unused now. That's when they got a hold of the meeting app company. They're like, oh yeah, it has a refresh system of between 4 and 9 minutes.
Oh my God.
What? So yeah, systems that say they offer it, but they don't, it's not their main core feature. It can sometimes be really bad for presenters. Know what you're getting into.
Well, I ran into an issue once. I'm trying to remember the name of the system I was using, but we were using iPads that were distributed to the audience that they could answer from. And the mistake that was made there is that they were all imaged with the same image. So on screen, it only looked like
one user.
Yeah, it was. But on the iPads themselves, it looked like a bunch of users. But on screen, it just looked like a failure. It was just like, oh my God. We didn't know what the heck was going on. I had to talk to the tech support people about that one.
What a nightmare. Who would have thought about that?
Oh, yeah. Right.
Awesome. Huh. Haven't encountered the John. You encountered that one? You're definitely.
No, I have not, nor do I want. Well, you guys would be exposed to a lot more different systems than I would, obviously, but I do enjoy hearing from other people in the industry telling me horror stories about other systems, because it makes me feel good about ours.
Yeah, you keep a little log of what you should avoid, that's for certain.
Yes, exactly. Learn from others' mistakes.
Okay, so because we mentioned it, I'm going to just kind of list it off, and then everybody can list off their pros and cons of what they think. So there are proprietary keypads or clickers. There's text message input, where you send a message in to have your answer displayed. I'll just say there's web page or browser based, whether it be iPad on your phone or even at a computer. So John, in your case of the CEO that was doing the global workforce organization, I'm thinking a lot of those people would be logged in on their computer watching the video stream. So they actually have a computer browser interface. And then there are a lot of dedicated meeting app options where it could be on the phone or could be, well, I'll just say it could be on the phone, but they're going to be their own dedicated app. What are goods and bads, pros and cons, likes and dislikes of the different options? Or how about proprietary keypads? I mean, I think they're good because they have the lowest learning curve. That is easy. You just hand it out and people instantly know what to do.
Yeah, and we've tried to like learn from that. We've been criticized in the past that our interface in the past has been a little too basic. And my response to that is, you don't know the sophistication of your audience. And, well, you know, the response back is everyone operates in an app smartphone world and they're so savvy. I'm like, yes, if you're under 15, you are. But a lot of times when you go to these events, it has to be simple. And I think the simpler click a button you're in, you know, remove those friction points. If you have to download and remember passwords and some of those other examples that you just talked about, it becomes you're adding friction points between the audience member and their input. So remove as many of them as possible. And if it's as simple as clicking a button, you're onto it. You're in great shape.
Yeah.
Have you had any keypads ever go bad on you? Not bad, like people not be able to figure them out, Ben?
So I've had issue with, I've literally seen attendees pick up a keypad upside down and it, you can't, you know, they're not even looking at what they're really pressing. And you just can't help that. I've also, usually what I try to do if I'm doing a keypad show is I will go through and I will test each keypad because within a bunch, there's usually a couple with dead batteries or they're just flat out don't work. Like they're just, they'll just blink and like do nothing. So you got to get rid of those.
Wrong frequency. I always check them for frequency to make sure they're going to talk to my system.
Well, what I've been doing now with Turning Point shows is I will have the keypads all on channel 79 and I will run two dongles though. I will have one on channel 41, which is default, what they go to, because what will happen sometimes with a lot of like the newer, LCD screen, keypads, I think that the battery slot is a little wonky, a little loose. And so the battery will disengage for like a split second and reset the keypad to channel 41. So this with running two dongles, you know, the majority of your votes are going to come in on the channel that you selected, but the few that default to channel 41 are still going to get picked up.
That's an amazing technical tip. I'm going to put that down in our Turning Point info sheet. I've never thought about that. That's a amazing idea. Of course, that's only for people that want to run the show and have a technical geekiness to them. But to me, I'm thinking, Ben, you're brilliant. That's awesome. How about text messaging? Because everybody text messages. I mean, you can even text message on a flip phone. So do text messaging options work? Because there's a lot of text message options out there.
Again, you're allowing room for error on the user error. And again, to be successful, the less chance of user error, the better. You could have the best system in the world, but the user error is the big variable, and that's the one that you got to look for.
I totally agree. I think text messaging is great, but it's a higher learning curve. And to get people into the system, it's like you almost have to, I recommend like an MC actually come out and do a couple of test questions, not just one.
Yeah, sorry.
Get them into the system, and therefore the text messaging works throughout the rest of the meeting. But boy, that initial hurdle, I try not to put that on a real presenter where it matters, where they're trying to capture live data. But I think text messaging is probably one of the lowest entry points as far as everybody being able to have it. And then obviously the last option is kind of the combined, the web page option. Does anybody have problems with the standalone apps or browser-based systems?
I've noticed, depending on the show, sometimes voter participation can kind of decline a little bit throughout the day. If it's a really long day, towards the end of the day, people don't want to keep on logging in to different sessions to vote.
So I've actually had, I thought you were going to say this one, Ben, I've had at the end of the day or towards the end of a meeting day, we get lower participation. And I think it's because people's cell phones are dead. We've done a number of meetings where it's kind of an attendance count where it's more pharma medical. So they have to get their continuing education numbers are based on attending different sessions. And a lot of systems have gone to, you know, using some sort of ARS system to basically track attendance.
Yeah, we've incorporated that where you can check in at the door by scanning your name badge or checking in on your phone. And then at the end of the session, you fill in a quick evaluation and that evaluation will confirm your attendance. And then that has evolved into, you know, you get your certificate at the end with a list of all the sessions you went to. So it saves a lot of work for the administrators running the conference in tracking people's attendance at the sessions, and they can get their certificate right away. So we've kind of created a couple of nice shortcuts with that one that has worked well.
Okay, last few before we wrap up here. So if a presenter wants to capture data, such as how many surgeries are on your schedule weekly? So we're doing a medical meeting and they're trying to gather some data points to use for their for their research or for their book or for their reports. Do you guys get those recommendations and software you like to use for that? I mean, is that a pretty common type of thing?
Sure. I mean, there's a couple options. I mean, the browser-based options, you can send a specific response with, you know, however many you're doing weekly. Or if you're just doing a keypad show, you just set up a question slide with responses of 1 to 5, 6 to 10, 11 to 15, whatever. It really depends on what the client wants.
Yeah, we've done, we're in Minnesota here, there's a lot of medical device companies. And they do a lot of meetings and feedback sessions with, actually you brought up surgeries. We did one recently with some brain surgeons. So I made the joke that it's not brain surgery, except it is, where they logged in and they were given lots of, just like Ben described, those options. And this was very, obviously very valuable feedback to the company that was given the presentation. But as those responses came in, there and then the company was reacting to him. Okay, so you don't like we're doing the way we do X. Let's talk about how we can improve that for you. So it was very much in the interest of the presenter and of the company presenting to get that feedback and then have an immediate follow-up to it so that they could, because, you know, I remember working in the restaurant business and the guy that I worked for saying, I'm not interested in comment cards that tell us we're doing a great job. I want the comments that tell us where we're lacking because that's how we'll improve. And that, and I thought that was interesting. And they, this medical device company took on that same mantra. You know, we don't want to bring you guys, fly you guys in here from all over the world and tell us we're doing a great job. We want to know where we can do better because, you know, we're in a competitive world and that feedback is very, very important. So please be candid.
I think anonymous can lead to a lot more improved audience interaction. Like, you know,
I agree.
Hey, we're just capturing this information. We do not know who answered what question, unless it's like a game scenario, then you got to know where it is. And, you know, there are certain reasons to actually capture that thing, but it is an option in almost every system as to whether it's anonymous. The other option is, oh, what would I call it? You know, can I answer more than one time? So if the audience, if the question goes up, how many surgeries are scheduled? And I say 5 to 9, like, wait. No. This is per week. I thought that was per day. Can I change my answer before the polling is closed?
Yeah.
And that's an option. A lot of them.
It is a lot. And we've done the same with Word Cloud where I don't like the word that I put up. I'm changing it. And so it overrides the previous response. Or sometimes we've set up polls where one vote and you're done. And if you try and vote again, it obviously doesn't count. So there's lots of different options each time.
Okay. So the big one that I think has become probably, and you both have already mentioned it, I think the big one in audience response has become the biggest request, I would say, of the past 18 months for me, is panel discussions. We want to get the audience's questions. We want them to submit their question through the audience response system, and then we want it to show up on a confidence monitor for the panel to see. Some systems do it better than others, but I think this has become like one of the biggest uses for audience response as of late. Are you seeing similar, Ben?
Yes, actually, the conferences IO system that I've been using, it works really well in this type of situation. You can set it to manually filter out the questions before you let them hit the screen or the downstage monitors. So someone, what usually happens is someone from their staff will select the most pertinent questions and push those down to the DSMs.
So I'm going to answer on behalf of John, because this is when John got on, we were saying hello. And I said, hey, John, I just recommended your company literally about 45 minutes ago. I had somebody text me and say, hey, one of our meetings wants to have a Q&A, but we don't want, it's an audience of over 5,000. So we don't want mic runners and we don't want pre-positioned mics on stands. It's just not practical. What do you recommend? And VoiceHive was one of the three recommendations I gave. It was the first one. And here's my answer. I'll just read it. Hopefully this makes sense now that I'm saying this out loud and live. Yeah. I recommend VoiceHive. They have a full meeting registration and attendee app system. They have a great ARS module that is specific to Q&A. Everyone sends in questions through the mobile app, and a moderator on the client side with a provided iPad Pro can accept, remove, and reorder the incoming questions. All of this is then displayed on a proprietary web page that is fed to the downstage monitor for the panel to see. It is continuously updated by the client. I think that is the feature that I see missing in most other systems. It's kind of once you put it and approve it, if they have a moderation system, it's like there, and you actually can't remove it. You can't, you know, move on to the next question easily. I think there's a lot of room for improvement, but it's a huge thing. So, and it looks like Conferences.io does similar. I've used Slido. I don't know how to pronounce it. It's SLI.do. They have a kind of a cool system where the audience can upvote questions so it can reorder itself.
Oh, that's nice.
But then everybody in the audience is also looking at everybody else's questions and not paying attention.
We've actually just developed that same system with the audience, but it's pre-event, because rather than live during the event, and then live during the event, you're back to the regular Q&A. One of my favorite stats from our 6 years of existence is our Q&A system has been used by 17 different Nobel laureates for Q&A, where all over the world, where they like the system because obviously we filter out the questions. I would say 40% of the questions to Nobel laureates, especially on the science side, has been, do you believe in God or some derivative of that question? So we already expect that. So we've already set up a sort of a filter for that because we know it's coming. Which, you know, helps manage that vast feed of questions when you have either a large audience, like you mentioned, with 5,000 people, or you have a very popular speaker where you need to sort of set up some filter system ahead of time so that you're not having to rile through a lot of data to get to the good questions.
Yeah, I like that.
Interesting. See, I think that's really good. My problem with the whole upvoting thing is that suddenly the audience is, because they can see everybody else's questions, I mean, it's hard enough to get people to focus on anything. And the presenter on stage is competing with a lot of everything, especially when you say, hey, we have audience response. I want you to pull out your cell phone, your number one distraction. You know, the only thing better would be, hey, everybody bring your baby to the conference. And that'd be the only other distraction bigger. But you're letting people upvote, but you're not splitting their attention during the actual meeting. And I think that's a really, really, really cool idea, or a good way to approach it. That's the downfall I see of this whole ability for people to upvote live is.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that. In fact, in the meetings before this town hall, I had brought that experience with me. I go, if you have the upvoting during the event, people are focused on their screens and not focused on the presenter, and that's not what you want. What you want people is thinking and being engaged and then reacting to that rather than worrying about what's on their screen.
Okay, audience response system, ARS, is a way for a presenter or a meeting or even a classroom to get input from their audience. Some systems are more limited in the type of input that can be gathered. Other systems are more limited in the way of limited cell phone reception or Wi-Fi available in the meeting space. And then other systems are just limited by how fast they can display the inputted information and the ways that they can display it. Ways to engage with audiences are always being sought out, and the number of ARS offerings has literally exploded since I started managing ARS meetings some 15 years ago. I do want to say thank you to a longtime listener, Kim Hoffman, over in Akron, Ohio, for suggesting this actual episode topic. Kim pinged me, this was several months ago. Kim was asking some questions and gathering some recommendations for integrating ARS into a meeting for 300 school administrators that she was working with. Kim, I'm certain that meeting has happened by now, and I hope it was a huge success. And hopefully this episode provides even more information for future meetings. And then a huge thank you to both Ben Anderson and John Cosgrove for joining the conversation, sharing their ideas, insights, and opinions on audience response systems. Really appreciate you both being here.
Thanks for inviting us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Hey, are you guys okay to stick around for just a few more minutes? This is you know, it's always great to hear a tip or a trick that everyone else uses. And it doesn't need to be actually presentation or AS related, just something cool or geeky that you rely on.
Sure.
Okay. So as example, here's mine, and this is truly geeky, but I've been doing it a lot, and I had somebody else just look over my shoulder and literally said, how did you do that? And it's really, really easy if you know it's available. So this is using Microsoft OneNote, and I love Microsoft OneNote, but inside of Microsoft OneNote is an OCR, optical character recognition feature, that most people don't know about. So here's an example. I was given the bio for a presenter that they wanted to put into the confidence monitors. I took a photo of the paper with my phone, emailed myself the photo. The only reason I wanted, I needed a photo, a digital image of the text. I pasted that image into Microsoft OneNote. I then right-click on the image, and there's an option in there that says copy to text, which is also kind of an odd way of listing it. But what it really means is, hey, look at all the words here and do something with them. And then you just move anywhere else, hit paste. It gives you all the text in one paragraph or one text box. Copy and pasted that into a slide, broke it up across three slides, and I suddenly had downstage monitor notes instantly. So Microsoft OneNote, that is not used for presentation design, was actually my go-to tool for getting this huge amount of text into a presentation set of slides. So it's a very cool, geeky feature.
That is awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. I just want to make sure I'm understanding correctly. So it can decipher text from an image and translate that into actual text that you can edit.
Yes.
Wow.
It's pretty amazing how accurate the recognition is. Angled, skewed, unusual. I've used it for all kinds of stuff. It's pretty amazing.
Wow. That is pretty amazing.
Okay. Pro or tech tip, Ben?
So let's see. This is going to be for if you have a large participant list that you have to assign keypads to accurately. So this is within, you don't have to have a QR scanner or a scan gun or anything. All you need is an audience response dongle. This is going to be for Turning Point. So you'll have to create the participant list per usual. Plug in a dongle into your machine. Make sure your frequency is correct. Then select the participant list in the settings pane, then click the participants option under the Turning Point tab, select the real-time registration tool, turn registration on via the button in the upper right-hand corner. You'll see names of your attendees with an associated number to the left. Grab a keypad, click that number, and you'll see that the keypad is now assigned to that attendee. So it's on the screen, it's going to be 1 through 9 and then 0. And so Ben Anderson is in the number 1 position. You press 1, and then off to the right of the screen, you will see the 6-digit serial number of that keypad is now assigned to that attendee.
No way, really? So it's creating a list of names and then just assigning them numbers.
There's only 10 per... It comes in slides, so there's only 10 options per slide, but you just got to click to the right and it refreshes with the next 10 people, and you just go through your keypads and just 1 through 0 assign these keypads to people. It's quick.
Ben, I'm going to have Lori listen to this because she generally is the person that manages these. We do the whole Excel list, and then we're pulling up the registration, the keypad ID, and we're putting it in the Excel file, and then we're labeling it so we know which goes to which. I don't think we've ever done the automated approach. We do it kind of manually.
And I feel like I need to give a shout out to the tech who taught me about this. Is that okay?
Oh, absolutely.
Her name is Michelle Ash, and she's based out of Las Vegas. She's great. I work with her a lot, and she taught me this trick, as well as the earlier tip I gave about using two dongles, one on channel 41 and one on your selected frequency.
And that one's really cool too, because I've had that situation where, you know, we just lose them. And then you, end of the day, you're going through checking frequencies like, oh, now I know why we didn't get this person. I actually, yeah, that's brilliant. Okay. So those are two really amazing tech tips for the audience that uses Turning Point keypads, because those are right. Awesome. John, pro or tech tip for us?
But I will give you a less audience response type tip. And I'll give you a more when you're on the road as a tech on the road tip. If you've got an Amazon Fire Stick that you use at home for watching TV, and of course I use one because I can hack it to watch my Irish TV shows, you should take that on the road with you. I told this to my friend who's a pilot, because all your settings are on there for all your apps, all your Netflix and all your videos. So when you go to your hotel room, you can plug it into the back of the TV. You don't have to spend half an hour plugging in your passwords because it's already there on the Fire Stick.
Oh, that's a very cool one. Hey, that's literally it, guys. We're going to call it a fantastic session.
For episode show notes, links, and more from this episode, visit us at our website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for our hosts, or comments through our website. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website for additional options. If you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. Stars and reviews are greatly appreciated. Look for new episodes the first and third Tuesday of each month.